WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A re-envisioned version of the musical Jekyll and Hyde is headed to Broadway, but before it gets there, it is touring key cities around the country and opened here for a week-long run on Tuesday. It stars Tony nominee Constantine Maroulis and multi-platinum R&B sensation Deborah Cox. Both will join us later in the program. First, everything you need to know about flu season. It's almost here, may be here, in fact, and two doctors who know everything about it are here with us now. Dr. Stephen Keener is medical director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And he is here in our Spirit Square studio. We're joined by phone by Dr. Carlos Piccone, vice chair of the Department of Internal Medicine at Sibley Memorial Hospital and a partner in private practice with Chevy Chase Pulmonary Associates in Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us as well.
Sure, thank you.
When is the official start of flu season, Dr. Keener?
Well, so one fact that people may not always realize is that influenza is around all year long. And during the summer and the warm months, there's not very much of it, but there is a little of it. When we see our seasonal outbreak of influenza, at least in this part of the country, is during the months of February, March, and April.
Now, in years past, in recent years past, we had shortages of the flu vaccine. That is not the case this year. Is that correct, Dr. Piccone?
Correct. There is plenty of vaccine. In fact, for the past couple of seasons, there have been plenty of vaccines, and now we have different modalities of vaccines. We have both intramuscular vaccine, which is the old vaccine that has been available since 1968. We have now there's a new formulation that is intradermal, and of course, we know about the live vaccine that is administered nasally.
I want to talk about those three different delivery systems in a second or two. I was told, however, that this flu season is likely to be unpredictable. That's the description that experts have been using, at least. Why will this season be any more unpredictable than previous ones?
I think the flu is unpredictable by nature. Your guest can also attest, the virus itself has a segmented DNA, and that allows the virus to mutate. And so it's not a question of will it mutate or not. It will, and certainly those mutations, essentially they change. That makes the virus change the antigenic composition, and therefore your protection fades over time because the virus is able to avoid the new antibody titers that people have developed over time. So, you know, the virus is will change over time. There are minor changes and major changes that develop. And I think that in this particular season, do we know for a fact that it will be worse than others? We truly don't know. But there are some unknowns. We know that there is a new virus that is that has been brewing in some of the Midwestern states that is called an H3N2 virus that has been mostly associated with, country fairs and the like, and maybe may originate in swines. So that is one unknown that is becoming, there's an uptick in the infectivity with that particular virus. And that, of course, with the prevalence of H1N1, which is the one that, the vaccine has all three. Essentially, has a strain that is a B strain, there is an H3N2 strain, and there is an H1N1. So there are a number of unknowns. I don't know that anybody can say this season will be worse.
So now, Dr. Keener, that's part of the problem with developing a yearly vaccine, because isn't it kind of an educated guess about what to put in there to protect against whatever flu strain is flying around?
That's exactly right. And what the World Health Organization does every year is that they do surveillance on the various antigenic strains that are present around the world, and they try to predict what's the most likely, what are the most likely strains that are going to cause disease. But as Dr. Piccone said, it is a guess. And there are other factors that are involved, such as as weather patterns and you know, how mild the winter is. I mean, who would have guessed that last year we would have had the lowest incidence of influenza that you know, practically since we've been keeping track?
Wasn't it a pretty mild winter in this part of the country?
It was in this part of the country.
Then?
But nation
why?
But well, I think it went into, not the only reason, but it certainly was a very low incidence, yeah, influenza winter.
I'm told that 2 out of 3 adults, Dr. Piccone, 67%, say their biggest fear regarding the flu is spreading it to family and friends, and yet 61% of those 67% fail to get vaccinated. Why?
Yeah, that's the biggest disconnect. Why? Well, I just feel that there is this pervading idea that somehow the influenza is not a major disease, or that it cannot cause serious disease. So most people believe, particularly the so-called immortal age group, you know, people between ages of 18 up to 65, frequently, you know, they feel they're immunologically strong, they feel they're immunocompetent for the most part, they have quite a bit of resilience, and so they just don't see the importance. So they don't realize that influenza can cause serious disease, and more so in some particular groups, you know, in children, in pregnant women, in the elderly. And so that is probably the main reason. But also it's a matter of, I think, education and public health policy.
Yeah, you're the public health director here. Is if you get the vaccine, if you get the shot, are you safe? You're not going to get the flu?
Well, it's certainly not 100%, and I got to be careful about that message, because I don't want to send a message that just because something isn't 100%, it's not good. The influenza, the vaccine, is the best way, the best single way to prevent getting influenza. From year to year, it varies of how effective it is because of the match between the vaccine components.
Right.
And the strains that we actually have, but it's a very good preventive measure.
If you get the vaccine and it is effective against your contracting the illness, are you then also like a brick wall? You can't pass it on to somebody else because you didn't pick it up. How does that work?
You can't pass it on from actually having infection in your body, but the way a lot of people pick up the virus is on surfaces. So let's just say there's a doorknob somewhere out in the public that gets used by everybody, and everybody's been, you know, blowing their nose and coughing into their hand, and there's a lot of influenza viruses on there. If I touch that doorknob and then immediately shake hands with you and you touch your face, you know, that is another way it can be spread. And so, you know, I think there are some kind of helpful guidelines about hand-to-face behavior, washing hands and coughing into your sleeve, and, you know, some of these practical measures, which are, you know, also important, as is getting the vaccine.
How much does the fear of the shot, Dr. Piccone, play in people not getting it?
That's a good question. I don't know that people are necessarily afraid of a small intramuscular injection, but I think it's, as your guest just mentioned, is the idea, first of all, making an appointment or somehow making yourself available to go get the vaccine. The other problem is some people just have this fear that the vaccine somehow can cause disease itself. In other words, that the vaccine somehow will cause a disease or will cause a potential disease. Those fears are not founded. We know the vaccine is, you know, essentially the vaccine has antigenic components. It has proteins and glycoproteins that generate a response, an immune response, but it's not the intact virus. In other words, the vaccine cannot possibly cause disease. It may cause an immunologic reaction, and you may have a low-grade temperature, you may feel fatigue, you may feel malaise for, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, but it will not cause disease. And in fact, you could argue that if you develop some of those constitutional symptoms of that you may actually be responding properly to the vaccine, and therefore your immunologic response is even more profound, more important. and you will be better protected.
So to be clear, if you get the shot, some people do have a reaction to it that lasts about 24 hours. It is not the flu. It's it's an immune system reaction to something it sees in the body that is foreign and tries to fight it and then realizes, it's okay, and stops. So you're okay. But the vaccine itself will not give you the flu.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago three different kinds of delivery systems. I think we're all familiar with this intramuscular injection that they stick in your arm, and it goes into the muscle tissue, and they inject the vaccine into your arm. There's a new thing called, at least it is new to me, called Fluzone Intradermal, which promises, I'm told, to remove the fear of the needle. How so?
Well, the vaccine, this new formulation is... it's an intradermal formulation. It just goes into the superficial layer of the skin. It's a needle that is a microinjector. The needle is about 90% smaller than the usual needle. It's only 2 millimeters long, so it's truly tiny, tiny, and it just feels like a small pinprick. Mm. And also the beauty of that particular delivery device is that it's preloaded. And it's truly is trouble free. It's impossible. You don't need to aspirate or suction back. In other words, when you administer a vaccine inside the muscle, frequently you have to suction back, make sure you're not inside a vessel, and it's a little bit more painful because it goes into the deep muscle. This goes into the superficial layer of the skin, and we know that even though the small amount of injectate, the amount of fluid and the antigen that is injected, is sufficient to generate an equivalent response, immunologic response. In other words, the antibody titers have been compared between this formulation and the intramuscular formulation, and we know that it's equivalent.
Now, the Fluzone Intradermal, is that available at the health department? Is it readily available in Charlotte?
It is. It is.
And what about the nasal spray?
The nasal mist.
The nasal mist.
Yes, this is another great way to avoid a needle.
Would anybody get the needle if they could get the nasal mist?
Well, the nasal mist is indicated for a specific age range, and I believe it's 2 years through 49 years. So it's not for everybody, but it's just a simple. It's really an injection of spray in each nostril,
right?
And it actually provides excellent an immunological response.
So if you were counseling somebody who wanted a flu shot or the flu vaccine, which way would you say they should get it?
Well, I think it depends on a lot of factors, and I think this is one of the important points because we do have there's actually another product that we haven't talked about, which is it's a high dose for those that are over 65 that provides a stronger level of protection for seniors that are over age 65. I would counsel seniors to get that one. Mm-hmm. I think if most people, most adults are okay with getting either the intramuscular or the intradermal product, and we found that the flu mist, the nasal mist, is an excellent product for school children. And school children are one of the major ways that influenza gets spread from person to person. So if you don't have to stick a child and make him or her cry, we found this works great in schools.
I have less than a minute left, but I'm very, very quickly. If you or someone in your family comes down with the flu, or if someone in your family comes down with the flu, how likely are you to contract it? And if someone in your family comes down with the flu, is it too late to get a flu shot to protect yourself?
So number one, it is never too late to get a flu shot, and people can get flu shots throughout the flu season. It is going to be available in retail outlets and doctor's offices. You should get the flu shot. Having the flu shot will help prevent family members from getting influenza.
Dr. Stephen Keener is medical director of the Mecklenburg County Health Department. Dr. Carlos Piccone is vice chair of the Department of Internal Medicine at Sibley Memorial Hospital in Washington, D.C. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're coming right back with the stars of Jekyll and Hyde, Constantine Maroulis and Deborah Cox. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Symphony. The symphony and oratorio singers perform Mozart's Mass in C minor under the direction of Christopher Warren Green, November 16th and 17th. Belk Theater, tickets at charlottesymphony.org. And Nexen Pruitt, lawyers helping companies meet business challenges in court with regulators and at the deal table with offices in Charlotte and seven other Carolina locations. Next challenge, next level, Nexen Pruitt. Well, we've sent probes to Mars in the past, but perhaps no mission to the Red Planet has been as ambitious as the one underway right now. The Mars rover Curiosity spent months getting there, made a flawless first-time-ever one-of-a-kind landing, and is now exploring the surface. And we'll talk to one of the people who are part of the mission tomorrow at 9 about what rover is up to, or the Curiosity is up to, and what they hope to get out of this mission. That's tomorrow on this program.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, in the wake of President Obama's victory, Republicans are questioning whether they're out of touch with an evolving electorate. What's ahead for the GOP?
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It isn't often that big musicals come to town before they open on Broadway. It's usually well after the fact, and usually not with the people who starred in the show in New York. That is not the case with the show we'll talk about for the rest of the hour. If you are one of the fans of the Frank Wildhorn musical Jekyll and Hyde, if you want to be among the first to see this new incarnation of the show, well, now's the time.
This is the moment. This is the day. When I sent all my doubts and demons on their way, every endeavor I have made ever is coming into play, is here and now, today.
It stars Tony Award nominee Constantine Maroulis in the dueling title role. This new production of Jekyll and Hyde also stars multi-platinum R&B artist Deborah Cox. Both Constantine Maroulis and Deborah Cox join us for the rest of the hour. Welcome to Charlotte. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. You both look asleep.
Gee, I wonder why.
It's quite a grueling schedule. And, you know, on top of the performances, to constantly do press and get up, you know, it's a lot.
Well,
I
promise to make this as painless as possible.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How unusual is it for a show to be on its way, to tour the country before it goes to New York, before it opens on Broadway?
Well, actually, I think it's the way they used to do things in the old days.
Yeah.
So,
but they would just play New Haven in Boston then.
Well, not necessarily. Yes, there was a lot of that sort of specific out-of-town tryout stuff, but a lot of times shows would tour around the country. So we're sort of doing a reverse business model as to what most people are used to. But Nederlander organization, amazing place to work, and they're celebrating 100 years in the business. They kind of have an idea as to what they're doing.
Isn't this how the other version of this back in the 90s started out too? It started out as a concept album, and then they did a road tour, and then they took it to Broadway, and the same thing is happening here. You even have an album already. Obviously, we just heard part of it.
Yeah, we have the concept recording that we recorded in July, mm-hmm. before we went into production and before we went into rehearsal. And yeah, and now we're here on tour.
So when you record the album first and then go into rehearsal, you're really familiar with 50% of the what you have to do on the stage, aren't you?
Somewhat, yes. We weren't very familiar with the songs at the time when we recorded the album.
Uh-huh.
So it was a bit of a learning process. And I feel, we're far more sort of in tune with them now and emotionally connected to the songs and the material and as we apply them to the story and stuff.
I also think the concept album was more of how Deborah Cox, the recording artist, Constantine Maroulis, the recording artist, would approach these songs if they were in the pop world. You know what I mean? Like, these are radio versions. These are not the versions that are particularly done in the show.
So when this goes to Broadway, will it be re-recorded
as the
Broadway cast recording? And,
yes.
And what we will hear from the two of you will be, you think, substantially
what is
different?
What is more sort of the flavor or the mood, mm-hmm. or the style of the show?
Not completely different.
Not completely,
but, you know, we've actually, in recording the record, the producers really liked what we were doing, so we've sort of brought some of the world of the concept album into the show as well.
But isn't that what people want today? I mean, seriously, if you're not going to be from the Broadway world per se, and you are, because I know you've done several Broadway shows, and so have you, Deborah. But if you're not Kristen Chenoweth, if you're not Kristen Chenoweth or Bernadette Peters, you are a recording artist in your own right, and so are you. People expect to hear what they hear on the radio when they come to see you, don't they?
I think there's a little bit of that, and I also want to just sort of warn people or just let people know that they're not going to get, you know, nobody's supposed to be here, you know, gospel-esque vocals.
What would be wrong with
during
that?
It's just not, you know, it has to be related to the story, you know, so... Yeah.
Both of you have been on Broadway. Constantine, you're a 2-time Tony Award nominee for Rock of Ages, which you were in for a very long time. And what's wrong with that?
Just once I was nominated. I'll take the second one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then The Wedding Singer. And Deborah, you were in Elton John and Tim Rice's Aida on Broadway. You've had 11 number one hits on Billboard's Hot Dance Club Play Chart, the number one R&B single for 14 consecutive weeks. Having spent years in music radio, that's a big deal.
Thank you. Why
do you want to do 8 shows a week in New York or on the road?
Why do I want to?
Yes. You got this other thing going that's pretty good.
Well, you know, the recording part of it is fun. I don't particularly like being isolated in a booth, you know, all day for hours singing. That's not my joy. I don't get joy out of that. So I like to be in and out. So when it comes to Broadway and musical theater, that's much more exhilarating and rewarding, and you're part of a bigger picture. And I don't know, there's just, as artistically, it's more interesting.
I want people, there are probably one or two people out there who have never heard you on the radio. Hard to believe, but okay. I want to play a bit of a song that became the longest running number one R&B single, Nobody's Supposed to Be Here.
I've spent all my life on a search to find the love we'll stay for eternity, the heaven sent to fulfill my needs. But when I turn around again, love has not been found. My heart got broken, no, it hurt so bad. I'm sad to say love wins again.
So I place my heart under lock and key.
Ooh, yeah.
To taste some time and take care of me.
But I turn around and you're standing here.
How did you get here? Nobody's supposed to be here.
Were discovered as a backup singer for Celine Dion. How did the acting thing begin? How did your whole career begin?
I started doing commercial jingles. I performed with all kinds of, you know, different cover bands and just, you know, became like a session singer kind of thing.
Which is really hard to do.
Yeah,
because you've got to really, really be good to be a session singer.
Yeah.
I mean, you do.
Yeah, and you got to be also a hustler, and that's kind of what I did. Just whatever the gig called for, I did, and so that's how I got started. I just, you know, kind of networked and played in bands and stuff, and then I got the gig to perform with Celine Dion, mm-hmm. and toured with her for about 4 months, and that was my introduction to the U.S. I'd never been to. I mean, outside of Buffalo and... But anyway, it was like a real, like, tour, you know, where you get per diem and it's on time and you get paid on time. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is really cool. So...
And the business side of show business can be shady, can it?
Very shady. Yeah. So I got a lot of experience doing that. And while I was out on tour, I, you know, shot my demo tapes. Back in the day, we had cassettes.
Yeah.
And... And that's what we did. We just, you know, networked and got a meeting with Clive through another A&R person who was at another show. And long story short, we took a meeting. And
Clive Davis is amazing because he just has found so many people over the years that have gone on to be – he sees something in them and they've gone on to be these major stars. When Clive Davis latches onto you, you probably just know your meal ticket has been punched.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I followed him from Whitney – the Eurythmics to, I mean, everybody on his roster were artists that I was actually drawn to, so it was kind of like fate, I think.
Now, Constantine, I think you're a really surprising guy. I think that most people do not know that you're a really trained actor, that you studied at the Boston Conservatory of Music and Theater. You have a BA from them. You apprenticed at the Williamstown Theater Festival, which is a big deal. Mm-hmm. They don't know that because we first met you as a contestant on American Idol, and you were already working when you went on that show. What had you done when you went? What had you done prior to being on Idol?
Well, I had recently graduated and apprenticed and all that. I was playing at a pretty popular sort of New York City band. I've been touring in Rent as the lead character, Roger
Already.
Davis. Yes, and we had been through Charlotte, I believe. And just hustling, working, grew up in New York.
That means I saw you in Rent.
Oh, I think so, yeah, probably 2003 or 4.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Well, here we are.
But that was, you know, you were on Idol back in the day when I watched that show.
When a lot of people watched, yeah.
A lot of people watched
30 million a night.
That show. And I want to go back to that moment when America first saw you. Oh, I think it's number 4. I forgot to give a warning here. Sorry. This is the moment when America first saw you.
Constantine.
So you're in a band, I understand.
I got a rock and roll band from New York City, yeah.
And they don't know you're here?
They absolutely have no idea that I'm there. So.
They do now.
He's defending.
Well, they'll know soon enough.
So what are you going to sing for us, bro?
I'm going to sing Crying by Aerosmith.
Right on. Good luck to you.
Thank you. There was a time when I was so broken-hearted. Love wasn't much of a friend of mine. The tables have turned. Oh, yeah. 'Cause me and them ways have parted. That kind of love was the killing kind. Listen, all I want is someone I can't resist.
Rockin', bro.
Yeah, man. Woo! It's hot in here.
Well, Simon?
I just felt as I was listening to this that I just didn't want to be your next door neighbor.
Oh, Paula, what do you think?
One here disagreeing.
Oh, thank you very much.
No,
appreciate
I think
that.
You're unique to this competition. I think you are what this competition needs.
Thank you very much. I feel the same way. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Randy, my man.
I would say yes, man. I think you deserve another shot.
I appreciate that. I can do it. I can do it. I promise.
Constantine, you're going to Hollywood, bro.
Oh, man.
I'm sleeping and right in the middle of a good dream. Like all at once, I wake up from something that keeps knocking out my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
I want to know all about this, man. What was going through your head? I'm sure you have not heard that audition piece in a long, long time, if ever. What was going through your head when you heard that?
So much. I don't know. I'd come off the strength of Rent. I had this band in New York that had a great influence over me. They were these just bad boy Brooklyn kids, and not Brooklyn as we know it now, like hipster Brooklyn, like animals, actually. I love them all, but just maniacs. And so I kind of went in with this sort of, you know, character I had sort of built up doing Rent and playing in a band. And I kind of knew that I had to try to stand out, and they had been interested in me all week. I could tell the cameras were following me all week long before I got to that point. You remember, it's
right,
a long process.
Long process, yeah.
Yeah, it's TV magic. So,
so when you walk into the room, because there are several pre-screening auditions, aren't there? And when you walk into the room with Paula and Simon and Randy and whoever that other guy was, I couldn't figure out who he was.
Geez, I forget his name.
It's okay. When you walk into the room, for that room, were you confident? Because you've done a lot of auditions before. You're trained. Was it a big deal for you?
I was actually really nervous, because when I first walked in and then all the television lights were on, and I hadn't really seen the television show before.
Oh, okay.
But I knew who Simon, Paula, and Randy were. It just seemed so surreal.
Yeah.
They were all made up. They looked sort of like wax figures of themselves.
And it doesn't seem fair to me. That part of the show never seemed fair to me, because if you go to a legitimate audition, you have an accompanist. You have to sing a cappella there.
I mean,
why is that? I don't understand why they don't give
Well, I think it's just like the purest sort of way to hear someone's voice.
I think if
really?
You can stand up flat-footed and sing, you don't need accompaniment, you know? You may not always end up in the same key.
That's exactly right.
But I think that sets you apart if you can do that, you know? And,
And you've been involved peripherally with Idol ever since, as some other people have, because this really, it didn't make your career, but it put you in the national spotlight. It gave you exposure. Is that why you did it? Because you knew that if you got far enough in the process, this would put you in people's eyes.
Well, I knew that I had a knack for sort of always being a survivor, always had a job, was always able to sort of manage a few different things. I was a little older, and sure, I was looking for an opportunity. I needed a job, and you know, it was just like any other audition for me,
you
really.
You were a finalist that year. I think you came in, what, sixth? Because you've gone on to have sixth-place productions and sixth-place records. who won that year? Do you remember?
Carrie Underwood.
Oh, well, okay.
Of course I remember. I mean, we knew that she was very special from day one, and, you know, it was exciting to just be up there competing with her.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more of Constantine Maroulis and Deborah Cox, the stars of Jekyll and Hyde, through Sunday at the Belk Theater, 704-372-1000 for tickets. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Levine Cancer Institute, part of the Carolinas healthcare system, offering hope to those battling cancer by focusing on advances in cancer prevention, detection, diagnosis, and treatment. Details at levinecancerinstitute.org. And by Fisher & Phillips LLP, a national labor and employment law firm representing employers in North Carolina from the Charlotte and Columbia offices. Partner Mason Alexander and Fisher & Phillips on the web at laborlawyers.com. In the wake of President Obama's victory, Republicans are questioning whether they're out of touch with an evolving American electorate. What's ahead for the GOP in 20 minutes at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show? If you'd like to join our conversation with Constantine Maroulis and Deborah Cox from Jekyll and Hyde, now's the time, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Hello, it's Garrison Keillor with the Prairie Hump Companion, heard across the Carolinas from the Piedmont to the Appalachians and at the intersection of Queens and Queens right here on WFAE. Each week, the show brings you great music, comedy, sound effects, the news from Lake Wobegon. Saturday evenings at 6, and if you miss that one, you can listen to the repeat on Sunday at noon on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE.
That sound is kind of a hallmark of Frank Wildhorn, who did the music for this show, Jekyll and Hyde. And that, of course, is Deborah Cox, our guest, along with Constantine Maroulis, who plays Jekyll and Hyde. She plays Lucy. And you, we've talked about this before, Deborah. You are an R&B singer with a lot of experience and on the concert stage and in the recording studio. What's the difference in your mind in approaching these songs, which are geared toward a Broadway show and a Broadway audience?
What's the difference? I don't really think about what the difference is. I think more about just where the song falls into the overall picture, you know. Even though the songs are, you know, they're leaning sort of more pop and radio friendly, where they are and where they fit in the musical is, I think, I don't really think about it or separate it.
Frank Wildhorn gets a lot of criticism in Broadway circles because of the kinds of music that he writes. It doesn't. You can go to almost any show that he's written, and it doesn't necessarily. The music does not necessarily sound like or is reflective of the period. This is a kind of a turn of the century Victorian story, but these songs sound like pop songs, which is pretty smart when you think about it because people love them.
Yeah,
they come to the theater. They go out whistling the music. What a phenomenon that is!
I think the only people that really love Frank's music are the millions of people that come to the show.
Yes,
all over the world. So we're excited to be a part of this brand new sort of reimagined version of the show.
I think it's interesting
when you take a Shakespeare piece and you sort of deconstruct it and, you know, put a modern sort of twist on it, you know, kind of you have some of the elements of the period, let's say, but, you know, some modern sort of interesting elements to it as well. So that's sort of the idea with this show, with this version of the show. Sure, it's a Victorian piece, but, you know, the music has a gothic edge to it, but, you know, with a rock and roll and pop sensibility.
One critic wrote that this production is like steampunk meets the Rocky Horror Show. Is he right?
I don't know. I think, you know, what's interesting about what we're doing now is being out on the road, sort of discovering the show a bit, and you know, figuring out exactly what it is and the story that we're telling.
How is it different from the previous production? I know neither of you saw the previous production,
right.
Neither did the director see the previous production,
yeah.
But the idea is to reinvent this show.
Really, the focus in the pre-production with Jeff Calhoun, our great director, and the writers was to sort of really hone in on the storytelling and sort of trim some of the fat. Do you know, there's so much beautiful language in the original, you know, book, of course, by Stevenson and Leslie's adaption for the stage.
Leslie Bricus.
So many songs that Frank wrote. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us, we just tried to make it a bit more specific, really establish the characters more and define all of that. And, you know, an absolutely new design concept and new cast and crew.
I want to come back to Idol for just a second, because one of the things that is a constant criticism, at least when Simon was on the show, was the fact if anybody had a hint of musical comedy in their voice, that was like almost an immediate disqualification for him. He's like, it's not like you're on a Broadway stage. Yeah. And it's ironic to me that you made it as far as you did in that show, and you are a Broadway performer.
I grew up with it. You know, I always grew up with the equal balance of like rock and roll singing.
Yeah.
You know, the Ramones, Led Zeppelin. Do you know everything?
Which is not Broadway.
Classic rock.
Right.
And
of
then,
course not.
And then, you know, I loved West Side Story and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah,
all
the
same.
And what's wrong with that? Why was that a criticism?
Yeah, I think really American Idol really was less about really your individuality, and that's why I like the year that Constantine actually was on the show. That was actually the year that I really paid attention, because to me I felt like the years prior were all about karaoke singing, and when they raised the age and finally found people who were actually experienced and had some kind of, had performed before and stuff, it was actually refreshing. And so I think with Constantine, there's a tone that, musically there was something very specific and special and different, I think.
He upped the ante, and I think also changed
the
whole thrust
good.
Of
yeah.
the show.
Well,
exactly.
You know, thank you, Deborah. But, you know, I was a little older. I had some experience. I, you know, had the training. I was from New York. I was trying to sort of play the whole situation as well. And I was thinking about the future while I was doing it all. So he never said that to me, but anything about sort of Broadway. But I also think that they have their sort of buzzwords that they like to use in the show that, you know, elicit a certain reaction from the crowd, from the home audience, so they know what they're doing.
Those
right.
dogs. I asked people if they wanted to talk to you guys to give us a call or send us an email, and a couple people have. If you want to put your headphones on, we'll take a call in a second. But an email from Heidi has come in. I attended the show last night and just wanted to say how much my six-year-old daughter and I enjoyed it.
Wow.
I first enjoyed seeing the musical in 1995, and this version lived up to the first. We'll take a call from Claudia in Hickory. Claudia, welcome to the program. Hello, Claudia. Claudia once, Claudia twice.
There she is.
Yes.
Hello.
Morning.
Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. I also attended the performance last night, and they knocked it out of the park. I am not kidding. This is the third Jekyll and Hyde that I have seen, and it seemed like these vocals were especially difficult. Not that they made them sound difficult, but I mean, I have a little bit of musical background, and I just wanted to ask them. You have such a grueling schedule. What do you do to take care of yourself and your vocal cords? You know, all this time approaching Broadway in April, and I was just wondering what you did for yourself.
Well,
sleep as much as we can. And thank you, Claudia, for coming to the show, and thank you. For your kind words, yeah. We have, musically speaking, there are brand new orchestrations, and a lot of the keys have been raised and changed and altered and things like that. So a song might appear as though it is the same song, but...
You mean David Hasselhoff couldn't synthesize you?
Well, I don't know.
Constantine is in my register. I have to figure out and navigate certain notes when we're singing the duet together, because he'll hit the exact same note that I was thinking about hitting.
Where were you? What's your high note?
I don't know. It's up there.
Be modest.
It's
go ahead.
Very high. Honestly, it really is.
And how do you sleep? You both said sleep to take care of your voices. Hydration and rest are the things that voices need. But how do you sleep in a hotel room? I've been in hotel rooms. And at 8 o'clock, housekeeping. How do you do that?
Well, we fortunately, we both have good people looking after us, and we're in comfortable situations. We've done this before.
Yeah.
Do you know, to be honest, you know, there's so much going on in both of our lives, but so much, you know, that I want to recognize what's happening in the Northeast right now with my family, my friends.
How is your family? Because they're still up there, right?
My parents just got their power on a couple of days ago, and, you know, they're 80 years old, you know, and my father's been sick a long time, so it's not been a pleasant situation, just to be honest. So there's a lot weighing on me. I have a daughter that's away from me, not to, you know, spill to Dr. Phil here, but I just, there's the sort of normal life that's going on. This week in particular, I think, you know, a bit of a weather change. I am experiencing a little, like, sort of vocal fatigue, but I'm ready to rock.
The allergy capital of the
world. So something's going on, but we try to get our rest, try to take care of ourselves. No drinks, no nothing else.
You have to live like nuns.
Something like that. But
it's a discipline.
You know, it's not just about, like, warming up for the one show. It's really a whole lifestyle.
Claudia, thank you for your call. You know, that's one of the good things, I think, that American Idol, I hate to keep coming back to this, shows people, it shows young people who want to do what it is that you do. Because so many people think, well, I sing in the shower, I'll just go be a star.
Right.
They have no idea of the discipline that it takes to do what you do to the level that you do it and to be able to maintain it night after night after night.
Yeah.
When did you find that out?
Well, with Celine. When she would not talk before a show. And if she had interviews, I mean, everything was scheduled a certain way and she had her people. But I remember she'd do sound check, maybe do one song, if that, and wouldn't talk. And I thought that was pretty amazing and discipline on her part. Because all of us background singers, we were like, we'd be out.
And I'm red.
And then we get showtime, we're like, but, you know, you're young and
but they
think,
didn't come
you know,
to see you. They came to see her.
Right.
So
we don't have
it.
As many
but now it's
responsibilities.
On you.
Yeah. So now we have to apply those same principles.
Yeah. I want to hear the two of you sing this, one of the duets in the show that you do.
Right now?
I want to make it. How would you describe a dangerous game?
It's a dangerous game.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
Storytelling at its best.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know who to blame.
It's a crime and a shame.
But it's true all the same.
It's a dangerous game. No one speaks, not one word. But what words are in our eyes? Silence speaks loud and clear. All the world we want to hear. At the touch of your hair, at the sound of your voice, at the moment your eyes feel mine. I am losing my mind, I am losing control, fighting feelings I can't define. It's a sin with no name, no remorse and no shame, fire, fury and flame.
I'm the devil to blame,
and the angels proclaim.
It's a dangerous game.
Dangerous. You were right. You were right. Constantine Maroulis and Deborah Cox as Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and Lucy. I guess which character are you in at that point in the show, Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde?
Hyde. That is Hyde.
Okay.
But he's also, you know, what I'm discovering, he's sort of got as much control as he has. He's you know, he's driven by what he's feeling from her as well. Do you know, like, I think it's still so new to him, this skin, this hide skin, you know, and inside he's fighting Dr. Jekyll as well, you know, sort of. So I think that's what's going on a lot in that scene as well. And she, you know, has a sense that he might be the man that she met earlier, or if, you know, in the week, at the club, at the club.
You play a prostitute in this.
Something like that.
I like to say harlot with a heart.
Okay. Most
prostitute, my mother would not approve.
I'm sorry.
Actually, I mean.
Forgive me.
A prosty.
It is. Prosty.
Most shows, when they open in New York, have a couple of weeks of rehearsal, and they have previews, and off we go to the races. This has opened in September in California. You're playing, I think, what, 25 cities? Is that right?
25.
Like 20, yeah, over 25 weeks.
So by the time you get to New York, this you'll have all the kinks worked out. You'll know who you are in the play. You'll know what little tricks you want to do and what you don't want to do, and what fits you as actors and singers. Does it take all the pressure off of that opening night in April of 2013 for you?
I think so. I mean, I think it will always be a work in progress. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody is going to have their own interpretation of what they feel the final production should be. But I think by that point in April 2013, we'll have a good footing as to, you know, what the show is. And
And both of you have said good things about Jeff Calhoun, who is the director and who was also a Tony nominee for his terrific production of Newsies. From your points of view as actors, what makes him a good director?
Jeff, what is – oh, just kidding. I haven't seen him in a while.
In a minute.
And we've changed everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, Jeff is great. Jeff and I and Frank and – the Niederlanders had sat down over a nice breakfast and sort of worked out the whole deal, really, over a cup of coffee, which was nice. You know, Deborah came on. It all just kind of fell into place. So the thing about Jeff is he's got a great sort of specific method for he's just very meticulous. He's got a great aesthetic. He's got a very clean aesthetic. He's all about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I think his background as a performer really helps communicate with his actors as well.
He had a great vision, and he also allowed us to follow our own instincts as well to develop the characters that we felt they should be.
Deborah Cox, who plays Lucy, Constantine Maroulis, who plays Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in Jekyll and Hyde at the Belt through Sunday, BlumenthalArts.org. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production.